And I believe we're back. This is a great segment we just had. And again, just a reminder, if it's Brockton, whether it's Boston, Braintree, Weymouth, Quincy, you have an election, make sure you get out and vote tomorrow. I believe Brockton, it's 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's when the polls will be open. We shift gears, and I believe we have joining us on the phone line, we have Mr. Scott Sudikoff. Scott is a gentleman who I've known for a while. Scott has kind of a homegrown talent, even though he did go to, I think he went to the University of Maryland. Has done a lot of work in the Boston area as far as radio goes. Has this year had a chance to be the pre- and post-game host of the Boston Red Sox broadcast games. And I believe he also did a little something on Patriots.com in regards to a recent Patriots game. Scott, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing pretty good. Probably the first thing I have to ask you is because you were part of the broadcast team, does that mean you might get a ring?
I think I'll hold out for one. I'll hope for one, but I'm gonna assume that probably working 8 out of how many games they played this year,
179.
I don't know if I'll make the cut. I don't know if I'll make the cut, but I did technically contribute to a world championship. I can say at least.
Okay, give me your thoughts. You're a sports guy. I mean, the first thing we'll talk about is the Red Sox and. And depending on what we have for time, maybe we can even delve into the New England Patriots.
The Celtics, right? The Celtics.
No interest in the Celtics. I just don't. The Celtics. I think the Celtics are going to be built to. They're built to lose.
Yes, as we saw last night.
Oh, sure.
And Friday.
Yeah, I mean that you saw they had a lead. I believe. Did they have a lead yesterday? Against the Bucks.
It was Friday. They had about a 20.
They had 22 point lead against the Bucks, and they lost by 8 points.
Yes.
I don't know how that happens. But they're not built to win. They're built to hopefully get in on the Wiggins sweepstakes, the next big player.
Oh yeah.
We'll see what happens. But I gotta be brutally honest. When I first started, I have a little website that I kinda do as a hobby that I talk about sports, like KTBSportsMedia.com. One of the pieces that I had penned to put together, the blog, was that I did not see the Boston Red Sox going beyond 500. I saw them being maybe at the bottom of the American League East, and I saw them as, hopefully gaining steam for whatever free agents were going to be this year. I was wrong, obviously.
Well, I mean, you weren't the only person to think that. I mean, the majority of people were thinking the whole bridge year type of thing, where right. You bring in all these free agents on 1 year short deals, and you just try to have a semi-competitive season, and yeah, and you set up for free agents heading into 2014. But it's one of those things where the pitching on the team just reversed its course after last year, and guys like John Lester and obviously John Lackey and Clay Buchholz, and just how the bullpen came together. That was, I mean, really, that's what kickstarted the whole season. Well, how the pitching came together.
Well, look at John Lester. I believe he was 9-14. Under Bobby Valentine, and I think he had like a 4+ ERA. Who knew that he was going to be able to turn things around, have a record of, be able to get 15 wins and have a below 4 ERA and be the leader of the staff? Who knew that John Lackey was going to be able to rebound from not only, the whole chicken and bear incident under Terry Francona and the off-season surgery to fix his arm? That he was fantastic. He was big behind the resurgence of this team. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah. And the interesting thing with John Lackey is a couple of years ago when he was pitching with, when he needed the surgery, he was still pitching, which obviously that's a check mark in the whole, the whole grit and toughness to go out there and pitch with your elbow hanging. Mm. When you look back at that and you look at his performances, considering the pain he was probably going through, it wasn't all that bad. I mean, his numbers, obviously were below average or average for a starting pitcher in the majors, but factor in the idea that his elbow is probably in tons of pain and he's going out there and pitching every single day, his numbers weren't, awful. So he gets the whole year off to recover from the surgery. He loses all that weight. So clearly he's taking the season seriously. So, I mean, going in, maybe you had a thought that maybe he could turn things around, but not the way he did. And if you remember, all the way back in April, I think it was in April, a game at Toronto, a weekend, I remember being in my car listening to it, and he had to leave the game because he thought he blew out his arm again.
Right. They thought he got hurt.
Ended up just being, he just had a strained bicep, and
reacted.
Overreacted, exactly, to it. And from there, he just, he started strong, and he stayed strong for most of the season. I mean, he had a couple of outings here and there, as everybody does. But, yeah, I mean, he was the – when Clay Buchholz was the ace to start the year, really, just the way he pitched was 10-0 and then or 8-0 and then had to go away for, however many months with the injury. And then it was Lackey who took over. And then it's Lester who took over in the playoffs. Lester had the shaky start to the season and turned things around. And then, obviously, he had his World Series run. So, throughout the year – there were three different guys who helped carry the starting pitching staff.
Right.
And then throw in Felix DuBrant having a stretch in the middle of the year where it was, I can't remember the exact number, maybe 12, 13 consecutive outings allowing two runs or less, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. I might be off on a few of the numbers there, but it was a good run. So, things came together with the pitching, and then obviously we see what the offense could do.
But see, what we're sitting here and talking about, one of the things that when I looked at and I weighed everything out, I looked at the money that Toronto had spent. Toronto, of course, they were a little bit upset that, they had lost their manager, John Farrell, who, they released out of the contract, went out, spent all kinds of money, made some trades with the Mets to bring pitching over. And you look at what the Sox did. I mean, I wasn't impressed by Mike Napoli. I mean, it was the first thing, Mike Napoli, come on, really? Shane Victorino, it's just not impressing me. These people, David Ross, come on, a backup catcher. I mean, another Doug Mirabelli. What are they trying to do? Who are they trying to? Steven Drew, now you're really reaching.
To
find out, each one of those individuals that I just mentioned played a role throughout the playoffs.
And I think that was, again, going back to the whole idea of it's supposed to be a bridge year, that they weren't going to go all out. There weren't free agents out there that were going to complete. There wasn't one guy or two guys that were going to turn around a team completely. What Ben Sherrington did was get a bunch of guys that could do certain different things, roles, and you can't. And best case scenario in his mind was, wow, they're all going to perform at the best level that they can, and it's all going to come together. Which it did. I mean, then there's a chance that it couldn't. Napoli could have, his hip problem could have popped up early in the year, and he could have, missed half the season. Shane Victorino, I mean, missed a lot of action, but when he was in there, he was great. Steven Drew had his slow start with the concussion, and we know how it ended with the terrible hitting. Oh, actually, he had a home run in Game 6 of the World Series, so you kind of think about that, look at the defense he played all season.
Right.
So everybody's sort, and you're forgetting Johnny Gomes as well, who comes up with pinch hit home runs here, there, everywhere.
Yeah, I knew I forgot somebody because that was another one, Johnny Gomes, who they had signed for 2 years, $10 million, and I'm like, oh goody, another guy who could be a fourth outfielder. How many fourth outfielders will this team, myself, I was looking at a guy like a Josh Hamilton who, the Angels signed for big money. But what did he end up doing at the end of the, when you look at the money that they spent for him?
Where did the Angels ended up nowhere. In the end, the Red Sox come out looking like they're the genius. Ben Sherrington looks like the genius out of all of us, staying away from a guy like Josh Hamilton and, sticking to the plan they had, which, again, if the plan was just to put together a competitive team and hope that everybody comes together. And again, it's what happened. Going into the year, I was probably on the higher expectation, range. I was thinking 88 to 92 wins was possible if the pitching was good. Pitching was great, and the rest of the team was even better, and that's what you got. So even I was still surprised with how well they played.
See, I was happy to see them in the playoffs first time in a number of years. They finally made it. And then I was like, Tampa Bay, okay, we were 12-7 against Tampa Bay in the regular season. But Tampa Bay has this, they have the pitching. And if they're pitching, if David Price is on and half of those young arms in the bullpen are on, Red Sox might be going home in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the whole run of Tampa Bay pitching, Detroit pitching, St. Louis pitching, I mean, every single series you're thinking, oh, well, this is it. They can't hit these guys. But in Tampa Bay, all lefty starters.
Yep.
Or at least two lefty starters, and you have pretty solid right-handed lineup that can go up against that type of, you know, obviously Pedroia and Napoli. And of course, you have Ortiz and Ellsbury, who are left-handed hitters as well. But you know, they had the type of lineup that can hit strong lefty pitching. And then, you know, going against the Detroit Tigers and was a no-hitter through 8 1/3, and just really kept plugging along and doing small things. And then you get the big hit like David Ortiz's grand slam in Game 2 against the Tigers. And then you take on the Cardinals, who, yeah, good pitching, but young guys that maybe the moment's slightly too big for them. And I remember Adam Wainwright in Game 1 of the World Series. I mean, he was throwing straight fastballs. I mean, they may have been 95, 96, 97 miles per hour, but a major league player, like a guy like Mike Napoli, is going to be able to turn on that
on it, right,
and put it a long way. So, I mean, it seemed as if everything that could come together did come together for the Red Sox. And having been mentioned, Koji Uehara,
the fourth
closer in the end, pretty much.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And I was going to mention, because I actually, you know, a friend of mine who I talk, I do podcasts with on a regular basis, I was totally teasing him. I'm like, uh-oh, he's getting the cursed number 19. Here's a guy who they're going to bring in here, and he's going to get burned out by, you know, mid-July, August, and he'll be useless. Come to find out, this guy, you know, was able to, you know, become the closer that the Sox needed after losing Bailey and Hanrahan and, you know, and a series of other guys.
They tried Tozawa before Uehara, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly. So
yeah,
he was really the fourth guy in line.
Right. Yeah, and they tried whatever they could to kind of plug the hole in the dike. You know what I mean? And
And
successfully, this is a guy who came through. I would be curious, though, if will he be the solution going forward, or does he revert back to his role in 2014?
Sam, that's a good question, because Andrew Bailey will probably be back next year. It's old Hanrahan. Obviously, he was a one-year deal, and he would probably not even be ready, I would believe, for the beginning of next year.
Right.
I mean, how can you not just make him the closer from day one? I mean, they really... I don't know what argument you can make other than him. I don't remember his contract status. That'd be the one thing, I guess. The contract status. Is he under contract? Because if he is, I don't see how he wouldn't be.
Yeah, he is. They actually, I believe towards the end of the season, there was a kicker year. There was a team option you know, renew him for. There was an option year for 14, and I believe that they did renew.
Yeah, then, I mean, I don't know what reason you can make up to not have him be your... I don't even care if Mariano Rivera called and said, I want to come be your closer. That wouldn't even be good enough reason for me. I think the way that Uehara performed.
Well, don't forget, there was chatter. I know, and it was just mere chatter, that when Philadelphia was, you know, having a fire sale, they had gotten rid of some players here and there, that, you know, Jonathan Papelbon's name had popped up.
People were screaming for that idea back in July, and... I mean, you have to be very happy that didn't happen. It's not nothing against Papelbon in general, but it would be, you know, how much money all of a sudden now you're throwing at a closer for half a year who's not performing as well as he once did, and you have just fell into a guy in Koji Uehara who was cast off by the Orioles and the Rangers, and you never had this type of success with those two teams. So it's almost like you can't even blame Toronto or Texas or Baltimore for letting him slip through the cracks, because all of a sudden, you know, this Uehara performance somehow comes out of nowhere. But it's just a strange combination of events, really, this whole season. I mean,
storybook.
What happened back in April, obviously, with the Boston Marathon and how the team comes together and the city, and it just really a storybook type of whole thing to it. And that's really the overarching part about it. It's just how amazing of a story. If that was a story, if someone wrote the book of that, you would read it and say, that's a really good story. And, oh, that really happened. Oh.
Yeah, but you can also file it under you can't make this stuff up either.
Right, exactly. I mean, and then the whole thing about sports, and that's what's great about sports, is that something like this can happen on occasion. I still rank it below 2004 just because 2004 was, I mean, that team, obviously, 2004, going into the year, you thought, okay, they can win the World Series
right
this year. But it's just the whole, it's been having it happen finally, and that still will rank number one. I saw an article today in the with Chad Finn, the Boston Globe, talking about, you know, ranking the eight championships in order of probability, having the 01 Patriots still be the least likely champion. I'd agree with that, too, because 2001 Patriots, Drew Bledsoe gets hurt in the second game, and Tom Brady, who comes in and leads the team all the way to a Super Bowl. But this season would be a close third in that improbability, I'd say.
So what are you and your colleagues talking about off mic in regards to, you know, now we've already started the off season. We know that already Ben Charrington has already made moves to secure three of the four. I know Jared Saltalamacchia has not been, you know, tendered an offer sheet for 1 year. Was it like 1 year, $14 million? It's kind
1 year, $14.1 million.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yet, JD Drew's brother Steven has been tendered an offer. He would be making like $5 million more a year than he signed for last year, but they've offered it to him, as well as Mike Napoli and Jacoby Ellsbury. What do you got? What's the chat have been at the sports station in regards to the off-season moves already?
I think they're saying with Ellsbury, I think the Red Sox are just covering their bases. They're going to make him a qualifying offer. They know that Ellsbury is not going to take 1 year, $14 million. I think in the end, he's going to be gone. And the reason why you do this is so you get back the draft pick compensation from whatever team swoops in and takes Ellsbury. On the flip side, you don't offer a guy like Jared Saltalamacchia. It may mean that they don't want him back, but it also is I don't think a team is out there going to pay Jared Saltalamacchia that much money, so there could be negotiations afterwards. And the two guys in the middle, Mike Napoli, I mean, I think Napoli, 1 year, $14 million after 1 year, and the whole debacle with the contract of originally $339 million. Wouldn't shock me if Napoli, like, you know, maybe 2 years, I could see him coming back and saying, you know, look how I performed this year. I maybe deserve 2 years. And Steven Drew, it wouldn't shock me if Steven Drew says, yep, signs on the dotted line and takes it. I mean, but there's always other teams out there that are willing to come in and pay more at times. We'll see if something like that happens. I mean, I think I already read something or heard something that St. Louis Cardinals could come in and want Steven Drew to come shore up their shortstop position.
Well, he is a National League guy. Let's not forget he was with the Cardinals for a number of years. Am I correct?
With
the Diamondbacks.
He used to hang around with the Cardinals when his brother played for them.
Right, he was with the Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks, but he has a relationship with the St. Louis Cardinals, with some of their staff. He, you know, had a close relationship with them while JD played in St. Louis.
Right.
So that's a possibility. Looking at it personally, I mean, if I'm a fan of the Red Sox, you'd want Napoli back. I would think you'd want Drew back just based upon his defensive performance. And I understand how badly he hit in the playoffs.
Right.
But
he struggled this year in general, I think. At the beginning of the year, he struggled.
Yeah, and he had a slow start. He came in with a concussion during spring training. That got off to a slow start. I mean, I'm the type of baseball guy that I look at shortstop still as a defensive position. I know it's changed with A-Rod and Jeter and Nomar, and really shortstops have developed into a more of a hitting position. But I mean, you look over his numbers. His numbers compared to shortstops in the league are above average. So I don't know what else you want than an above average guy at the plate as a shortstop, and then the defense that he shows in tough in pressure situations that he made in the World Series make him look very easy at times. So to me, I'd welcome him back to shortstop, put Xander Bogaerts at third, and get the odd guy out as Will Middlebrook.
Yeah, he seemed to struggle. I mean, he had his struggles this year, and then when he returned for the playoffs, he struggled again. Let's not forget that he was part of that the little obstruction play at third base that, you know, the Sox, you know, lost because of.
Yeah, and I struggle to put any blame on him for that. I looked completely at Jared Saltalamacchia for that, just making that throw, and he didn't play the rest of the series after that.
Right.
So, I assume I'm not the only one who looked at that and looked at Saltalamacchia, and that's a situation you can never put yourself
bad
in.
Throw.
So.
All right. Well, again, we're speaking with Scott Sudikoff, who is a broadcaster in the Boston area, who not only does things in regards to updates when it comes to sports, but also is a pre- and post-game host when it comes to the Sox, and has also dabbled with the Patriots pre- and post-game for Patriots.com. Let's take a moment to talk about the Patriots' big win yesterday. Do you feel that this team is back to its form of last year?
I wouldn't say back. I mean, I think they're getting some of the offensive, obviously the threats together. When you put Gronkowski back out there, that opens up Amendola, who in turn opens up Gronkowski. It's kind of a give and take back and forth. Then you see Aaron Dobson had a very good game yesterday, running over the middle, down the sidelines, making a great touchdown catch. Keeps growing as the season goes, then you have three solid options of a receiving core. And the running back situation is always interesting because it never seems to be one guy. I mean, you see Ridley do a lot of the carrying, but Brandon Bolden, LeGarrette Blount.
Yep.
I'd say that in terms of offensive prowess, it's still a work in progress, but it looks a little bit better than it did earlier in the year. You score 55 points, obviously, against any, I don't care who it is, you score 55 points against, that's a good sign. Steelers defense, not what it used to be. The thing that would bother me with yesterday's game is you scored 55 points, but you gave up 31.
Right.
And then that's been the problem in the playoffs, has been, you're not going to score 55 points in a playoff game, usually.
Yeah. You were up 24, you were up 24-10 comfortably. And they roared back with 14 unanswered points. That was the scary part.
Yeah, and the defense, all the injuries, and it's tough to just keep plugging people in.
Well, let's not forget, you lost Rob Ninkovich. You've been losing players on a regular basis. Steve Gregory walked off, had a hand injury. And you're expecting a lot from this team. So right now they're 7-2 at the break. Do you see them? How do you see them finishing?
I mean, thinking about the schedule, I think maybe 2-3 games on there that you look at and you go, okay, those could be losses. They could very well be wins. I think 12-4 is still very much a possibility, and obviously that's going to win the AFC East. That's probably that could be good enough. Well, right now,
2 seed.
I'm trying to think about it. Well, it's fun. The amazing thing is you have both Denver and Kansas City. Who Kansas City 9-0? They played Denver twice over the next 3 weeks.
Right, someone's losing. I have a feeling that that'll be a split.
Yeah, and thinking about the 12-4 could be a 2 seed.
Yep,
it could be a 3 seed. Just how tiebreakers potentially work out, and obviously that's a big difference when you play
Scott,
wild card round.
Well, Scott, that's all the time we have. But can we have you back on maybe in a few weeks?
Sure, that'd be great.
Scott Sudikoff, it's another great Monday Night Talk. Up next, South Shore Live. Have a great evening.